Hi, my name's Cliff Roach, and I'm an alcoholic. Did anybody see the old movie Hood? There was a great line in there. He said, what we have here is a failure to communicate. I was looking at Bob, my old pal Bob. He called me to talk here in December, in November. I quickly surmised I was not the original choice. I just got ahead on me that way. You know, I pick up on things. But I said yes because I love Bob. I know that puts me in a distinct minority, but I love Bob. And so he said, we're doing steps with him. What do you want to do? I said, well, I love to talk about the traditions. So Bob said, great, we haven't had that. So you talk on the traditions. I said, really, traditions? Yes, traditions. I opened the program, and I'm doing the history of AA. What we have here, so I'm going to do the traditions. I'm glad I'm not doing the history, because Gail just, I cried so much I have to go to the room and get salt tablets when she did that thing. I was crying. Oh, tremendous. It had to come someday, didn't it? Click. The power presentation. In a few years, we'll have people doing their pitch. Here's the whorehouse where I was living at the time. And this is the first of my many wives. She's gone now. Oh, what a great deal that'll be, huh? But it was just absolutely magical. It was. Talking about traditions, I had an opportunity to go to Akron a number of years ago, and my alcoholic daughter went with me, and we went to the gatehouse. I'm going to get weepy tonight. I hate that. But anyway, we got to see that. And we had that feeling of belonging, of connection. And I got that last night, that connection to Bill and Bob and all those little timers. A guy Reflections. I think it's August the 20th or something like that. Do you hear music? Okay. I figured it'd be when I'd talk, But I don't have it as bad as you, Tom. My God, they tried to kill everybody with sound waves and no lights on you. That was pitiful. Treat a man with 50 years, for God's sakes. But the guy in the Reflections, and I think it's August the 20th, whatever it is, he talks about this bonding that we do. Can we bond with Bill and Bob and with each other? And the guy says, with babies yet unborn. And so we who love the traditions want us to be here when those babies yet unborn get here. Now, three of my children are sober. And I worked my butt off to keep AA being AA, so when they got here, they would have it. And I got a couple of grandkids. And I want it to be there for them too, for babies yet unborn. It's remarkable the bonding we do. And it only takes us a second. I wasn't in my sponsor's car 10 minutes when I knew it was going to be all right. I knew. He knew what I was talking about. And I knew that he knew how I felt. And I'll tell you a story about my sponsor. I want you to remember this through the whole miserable talk, okay? Don't forget this, what my sponsor said to me, because it comes important later. When I came to AA, I was a high bottom drunk, unlike some winos in the neighborhood here. And I had degrees, a number of degrees. And I was a smart ass is what I was. And my sponsor took me every week to the Laguna Men's Stag Meeting, which was at that time all these old original guys in Southern California. The old times, Chuck and all the old guys, Joe Quinn and Ralph, who was the meanest one of all. And I would do it every week. I'd whine. I should have known, you know, since I... And they would rip me to shreds. They would just... They used to watch out the window. Hey, you got the teacher. And one night we were coming home, driving the 30 miles back from Laguna to Oceanside. And I said to my sponsor for about the sixth time, they don't realize I'm sensitive. And I should have quit with fifth. You know what I mean? Because his knuckles were white on the wheel, you know, and muscles went... He said, let's get this straight, Cliff. You are not sensitive. You are an immature son of a bitch. I said, I kind of prefer sensitive. But that's the greatest lesson I ever got in AA. Since I have become immature and accepted the fact that I'm immature, the steps work great. When I was sensitive, I had no chance. No chance whatsoever. I was so engrossed in self that there was no other way I could have. And that was a turning point in my sobriety because I didn't sleep that night. And I went out and sat on the screen porch and I watched the dawn and I decided that my sponsor was right, that I was immature. And if I die drunk, my wife has promised to put it on the tombstone. Cliff Roach died of immaturity. You know, Tom will know this better anyway. We're a new organization. We are new. I've only been sober 38 years. I've been sober longer than half the time there's been an Alcoholics Anonymous. I have been sober more than half the time there's been an... And when we get the fat heads, we think we're going to go on forever. Things are going to be swell. We can screw it up and it's okay. Of course, we come from a long line of people that screwed it up, which is wonderful. I'd hate to think that Bill and Bob were up on Mount Olympus in white robes. You know, they were just goofy drunks like we are. But we could lose this thing. I won't bring up the Washingtonians. I puke the next time I hear about the Washingtonians. But it's true. There have been other organizations that did well with alcoholism. Nothing to, like what we've done. But if we don't have the traditions, and if we don't live by the traditions, and if we don't look at the traditions, we're going to lose this thing. When I was new, my sponsor had been a big slipper, but he'd been sober 8 years at that time. And he knew everybody in Southern California. And I got to meet the original members of Alcoholics Anonymous in Southern California. Nobody had ever been sober in California before these guys. And in 1975... my sponsor took a bunch of us up to Pasadena where they were having the first old-timers meeting there in Southern California. This is 1975. Everybody on the program had over 30 years. So we're talking about between 39 and 44, you know, right in there. And the talks were magnificent. I have a tape and I still play it about once a year. And to hear how the traditions came about... By the way, they screwed things up, you know what I mean? It was wonderful. The sense of humor and the humility was magnificent. And the last speaker was a guy named Mort Joseph. And Mort Joseph was the guy that had been on a drunk and read the Saturday Evening Post article, or the Liberty, whichever. And by the way, I delivered that Liberty magazine, and I delivered the Saturday Evening Post because I had a Liberty and Saturday Evening Post route. They've never written me from New York and thanked me for that. I expect a letter any day. But he read the Saturday Evening Post article in a hotel room in Arizona and then drove to Los Angeles and found Cliff Walker and that other bunch, and they started that first meeting. And Mort Joseph was the final speaker that evening in 1975, and he was talking about the very first meeting they had in the Cecil Hotel on the mezzanine, and there were a few of them there, and they said, you lead, Mort. And he didn't know what the hell to do. So he said, hey, we got this book, has this chapter, says how it works. Why don't we read part of that? I remember he said, I didn't seem to have any direction at the time. And now, we read chapter 5 all over the world. 190 countries, 70 languages, we read chapter 5. And that's one of the things, as an old-timer, that really ticks me off, is when people want to clown around when they're reading chapter 5. You know all the sick crap. I mean, that came... He had some direction. And so all of those people shared it. And then on the way out here, John, who drove me out, John Sabalas, my favorite sponsee today. But you're next. Chris, you're next. You're next. And we listened to Sybil Colvin. How did you know? We listened to her tape on the traditions on the way out. And she talked about a great deal about how they came about. She talked about Lillian Roth, this great singer and actress who wrote a book, I'll Cry Tomorrow. They made a movie out of it, how she joined AA, and now she was sober. And all the people said, well, let's go join up to watch the celebrities. Then she got drunk very publicly and committed suicide, took maybe 6,000-7,000 people with her. And all those things. There was a group that Sybil was talking about there in Long Beach, and they let the funds build up, and then they got into a big fight over how they were going to spend all the money, and they all got drunk. That's not funny, but it is in a way. And they were rattling around, didn't know what the hell they were doing. Well, AA really started growing, so Bill in 1946 wrote the traditions, and they weren't adopted till 50. Nobody wanted them. Bill wanted them, but nobody else. I don't know if Dr. Bob wanted them. I never read anything about that or have talked to people about it. But I know the groups in California didn't want them. They told him if he was coming out there to talk, they'd love to hear his story, but they did not want to hear about the traditions. They saw them as rules, and we're kind of famous for not appreciating rules. A rule is to be broken. That's the whole point of being an alcoholic. So it took him a long time and a lot of persuasion to get him adopted. He wanted these traditions to be adopted because he could see that AA was getting really big. You know, there must have been 700 or 800 people. And now, what is there, over 2 million all over the world now. So if we needed the traditions then because they're getting too big, my God, what's it like for us now? And that's the beauty of it. The traditions are not rules. The traditions, most especially, are not laws. They're traditions. When I taught college classes, and one of the sections of a class I taught was on semantics, you know, the meaning of words, the denotative and connotative meaning of the words. And the connotations, there's something called directive language. For instance, if you're walking downtown and there's a sign that says, keep off the grass. That's called directive language. Now, there's an implied promise there. If you walk on the grass, something's going to happen to you that you won't like. There's an implied threat there. We obey laws because they're fear-based. I'm afraid, I stop at this stop sign because there may be a cop here and he'll give me a ticket and that'll cost me a lot of money. I don't stop at the stop sign because I love you and I don't want to be sure I don't hurt you. Wouldn't it be great if we did that? Wouldn't it be great? But this is the only place I've ever known where I have the traditions so we protect us from us. One guy last week in the grapevine said, to keep the... nuts, I lost it. The idea was we keep the fellowship from being destroyed by the membership. That was it. that we need the traditions because we don't want the fellowship destroyed by the membership. And also to keep us from killing each other. A number of years ago, I think it was about 15 years sober then, a group of us took a meeting up to Laguna. They used to have a meeting in Laguna, California, where they would have bring another group in to share. Some groups only sent three or four, but I'm from a very big group, a very active group. And so we brought 22 up there, and I had 15, 16 years, and I had the most sobriety. So I introduced everybody, and I had the great good fortune of having seen all of them come in because they all had less sobriety than I did. I knew them when they came in, and then I sat there and watched. You know, and Debbie, we were talking about Debbie G a while ago. When she came into Alcoholics Anonymous, she was broken completely. She could not talk. You'd say, "Hi, Debbie," and she'd look at your shoes. And it took her a long time to get her head up to where she'd look in the eye. And she had, at that time, maybe 3 years sobriety, and we were only sharing 2-3 minutes each. And she got up and spoke beautifully. Today, she talks at conventions all over the United States and Canada. This person who could not talk now talks from podiums all over the country. And then there was a guy, Al, who was, when he came in, he was the most arrogant, big-mouth bully I ever met. And he had changed completely. He was just a kind, gentle, charming guy. And it went all night like that. And I got to thinking, what the hell is, you know? And it reminded me when I was a young man in boot camp. We started boot camp, there were a bunch of guys that were really fat. And there were a bunch of guys that were really skinny. And we did like 12 weeks of brutality. And the fat guys were skinnier. And the skinnier guys were fatter. And we all ate the same slop. And so I thought AA must be like that. Whatever they did to us there in boot camp, it was good for us. And in AA, the steps work. And they work because at some level, we are all the same. At some basic level, we are all just the same. And so, you know, they're talking about DNA. Does that fascinate you as much as it does me? They said 50% of our DNA is the same as an earthworm. Come on. And what is it, 99 9/10% of our DNA is all the same. It's just that 0.5% or 1% that makes us different. And we're alcoholics, then there's another little percentage there. Oh, I get it. Never mind. But that's why the steps are, we didn't invent the steps. You certainly demonstrated that. The steps go back to the Phoenicians, for God's sakes, in the Judaic tradition. You know, the surrendering and making amends. And you were pointing out, Gail, that he took the 6 steps and made 12 out of it. That was the most brilliant thing he ever did. And he admitted that himself. Because an idiot like me can only take little bitty steps. So we took one big step, which I couldn't have done. And, you know, like 6 and 7, we have to get ready. And then at 7, well, okay. Oh, I forgot. Oh, yes. So and the steps work because we're, and if we work, it's worked for other people. It worked for GA and lots of others. But the traditions, we have the traditions. Because we're all different. Some more different than others. And so we have the tradition to protect each other from us and to protect us from ourselves. Now, it was clearly read. I asked for them to read the long form of the traditions. Because I hear people all the time arguing about the traditions and they've never read the long form. To some people, the traditions are that noise they're making when they're coming back from a smoke break. You know, in my group, there's a bunch of them that think there's only 2 traditions, 11 and 12. That's when they get back to their seat. Oh, okay, now we'll start the meeting. And when I first got sober, they used to read chapter 5 and chapter 3. And then the conference decided we need to emphasize the traditions more. And so there was kind of some hard feelings there. And they let the chapter 3 go and started reading traditions after the break or whatever it was in the meeting. And so a lot of people have only heard the short form and they haven't listened to that very well either. But the long form, if you're going to argue about the traditions, any one of them, you have to look at the long form. It was read so well by Chris tonight, or by, what's the other guy, Mike. He's one of my favorites too.
You know, if you just read the third traditions, the only requirement for membership is a desire to stop drinking. That sounds like a good club to beat some newcomer over the head with. You mentioned pot, get the hell out of here. You know? I have three children who are sober in Alcoholics Anonymous. One 20 years, one 8 years, and one 7 after a slip. And every one of my kids, when they came in here, used substances other than alcohol. And I would hate to think we would have kept them out for that. Now, I'm with you. I don't want to hear a hashish story. I want to hear about alcoholism. But at the same time, if you listen to that long form, it says, we don't want to keep anybody out of here. We want everybody. We're inclusive. We're not exclusive. We're inclusive. You know that old thing says, they called me a rebel and a thing to flout. They drew a circle and shut me out. But love and I, we knew the way to win. We drew a circle and shut them in. We shut them in. And so if I hear a guy in a meeting talking about drugs all the time in a discussion or another kind of meeting, I wait until after the meeting. I don't jump on people in the meeting. I put my arm around them. That way they can't hit you with either hand. I don't know if you're familiar with Alcoholics Anonymous. And I would say 59 out of 60 say, oh, I understand you. And they... And the other one says, go to hell, I'll do what I please, you know, and that's fine. But I forgot to mention a little bit earlier, the traditions were designed by Bill primarily for the groups because they knew the importance of a group. You know, what were there, 40 when you were talking about when he wrote the book? There were 40 sober people in 3 cities. You don't think your group wasn't important then? You don't think when somebody went out and got drunk, the terror that came over those people? But see, now we got 3 million people around the world almost sober. What's the difference if somebody gets drunk? Unless it's me. And we've lost that feeling of the group is important. That's the only safe place there was in the world, was that group. And so he wrote those guidelines so we don't lose that connectedness. And so those are actually kind of why we wrote them. Now, they've helped me a lot in my own personal life. But they weren't written for me. They were written for the groups. And the General Service Office begs us yearly, do a survey of your group. Take an inventory of your group. Are you doing it right? There was an article in the Grapevine a couple of years ago. A young woman, she's like 25. She got sober when she was, 7 or what the hell. I belong to a group where everybody's a kid.
Hi, and a sticker.
They're good AAs, though. They're terrific AAs. But this gal is in the Air Force. So she's gone all over the world, all over the United States and all over the world. And she says, she walks into a meeting in France. She knows immediately if it's a group that goes by the traditions or a group that doesn't. You know, they greet the newcomer. They nurture the newcomer. They're kind and polite to each other. They don't allow other aspects of it to come in. My favorite, you know, no politics. You and I have a hell of a time with that. Vince and I have a hell of a time with politics because he's a right-wing radical. And my politics when I came into AA was blow it up or burn it down. I didn't give a shit which, you know. I was for peace. And if you weren't for peace, I'd kill you. So, my sponsor was like Vince. He was to the right of Attila the Hun, you know. And then all these other guys came in. There were about 6 of us that would ride up to the Pacific group every week. Not the specific group, the Pacific group. Specific. I spit whenever I said that. Specific. And, you know, we had a big car, and there were like 6 of us. And we'd get into these. I was the only left winger in the bunch, so we'd just get these screaming arguments. And one day, Bill pulled over, stopped the car, said, there'll be no more politics in this automobile ever. Mm-hmm. So, okay. So, but we drive through San Clemente on the way to L.A. every week, and the president was Tricky Dick Nixon, and he lived there. They had a big sign that says, Home of President Nixon. And we'd drive by, and they'd all look at each other, and they'd go. Yeah. And I'd go off. And then Bill would get pissed off at me. Those are great memories now. No politics in the car. And no politics in AA, no religion in AA. I think there's two... I'm going to do like you do. He has a broken watch, but he... You know, like he really gives a damn if it's late or not. One more story. I'm sorry, sir. I'm 38, almost 38 years sober next month. And the first speaker I ever heard at a convention was Tom. And he changed my life. And now I get to talk with him. Imagine that. But anyway, what the hell is that? Oh, there's two kind of underlying principles that underline all of the traditions. One of these principles may be applied to several, and another principle applies to several others, and sometimes both of them apply to each tradition. But the first principle underlying the traditions of Alcoholics Anonymous are, it's one drunk talking to another. It was demonstrated so well, so beautifully in yours. That's why AA has a billion times more successes than all the hospitals and all the treatment centers and all the psychiatrists and all the psychologists rolled into one. They wouldn't make a pimple on our foot. Because it's one drunk talking to another. So if we have a group, it says right there clearly, the reason we have that group is so that we will be able to bring in the new person. Everybody in this room, I know certainly it's my case, is here tonight because one other person shared with me, a little guy named Bill Blake, the most vicious man I've ever known. Thank God. But he took me to a meeting every night for 2 years. Every night for 2 years. First it was just me and then Al and then Skip and then the other guys came along. And we had all those other right-wing guys. You know. But I'm sure you're thinking of somebody right now in your head. And when I got sober, I used to get like 4 12-step calls in a week if I wanted them. A lot of times the middle of the night, 2 in the morning, all my relatives were dead. I knew what it was. And I don't know if you're like me. I never leaped out of bed and said, a 12-step call! Goody. Did you? No. I'd walk the phone, God damn, how many in Oceanside but me? Hello? call a guy sponsored, Kenny Meyer. Kenny, we're going. You know, I always brought a big guy with me. I wasn't dumb. And we did them. I work in central office for like 19 years and once a week. And in the last few years, very few 12-step calls. And most of them from women. I'll be damned if I what that's about. Now, a lot of people claim it's because the treatment centers are taking over what we used to do one-on-one. That's all right with me. But I don't believe that. I believe that people nowadays, they worry about their drinking. They know somebody in AA. They have a friend or an uncle or a cousin or a girlfriend or something, and they go to that person, and that person named AA. Now, you were talking with Clint, and he was talking someplace at a treatment center, and they said when they leave the treatment center, they have what would be the equivalent of a year and a half of sobriety. So when Clint talked, he said, well, in my group, we just wait 6 months and give them a 2-year cake. It is our badge, it is our reason for success, and it is why we stay sober. little thing like that. One drunk talking to another. It's foolproof, isn't it? If I go on a 12-step call and you're in the gutter and I go talk to you and I get you to a meeting and then you decide you don't want it, I'm ahead. I did what I was supposed to do. I carried the message to you, and if you did, and then if you get it, and I get to take you to more meetings and watch you change and watch you grow, well, I get 10 times more out of it than you do. And until you start doing that for you, you know, and so the group is encouraging that. That's what the group is for, so we can all get to help the new guy. And we're losing a lot of that, I feel like. I wish I would get more 12. Now that I'm retired, I'd love to jump up in the middle of the night and do it. But they just aren't there anymore. One drunk talking to another. When I was still drinking, I was the kind of drunk that read inspirational books. I don't know what you did, but I drank and read inspirational books. That didn't do me a damn bit of good because I was drunk. But the one I read, it's been the most important book in my life aside from the big book and the other books of AA. I was reading, the name of the book was The Heart of Man. It was written by some Trappist monk in England. And he was a real Jesus person. But I'm reading, and all of a sudden on this page, it says, I'm going to paraphrase, he said, "I am part of every man who ever lived. And every man who lives after me will be, no matter how infinitesimally, be part of me. And every action I take contributes to the balance of good and evil in the world." I threw that damn book for about 30 yards. I didn't want to hear that the way I was living right then. I'd been a teacher and a good teacher, but there's so much of my life where I just left wreckage and hurt kids and bad feelings. But you know, in AA, when you do a 12-step call, you get such immediate gratification. You can see right as you're doing it the good you can do. And so the traditions really protect that. Tradition one, I'm the small part of a great whole. That's what the long form has that the short form doesn't have. I'm a small part of the great whole. I'm a small part, but if I don't do my part, you don't do your part, and you don't do your, we're gonna die. We gotta protect and nurture the newcomer, or we will die. The group will go first, and then the rest of us. We include anybody. Tradition three, we include everybody who wants to get sober. We're not responsible to any authority. Four, five, we only have one primary purpose, and that's to carry the message that the alcoholics still suffer. And we don't want money and money, property, and prestige would certainly get in between that one-on-one, wouldn't it? Look at the number that, you know, we're self-supporting. And the most important one of all, we're non-professional. That was very clearly said in the traditions. We don't pay people to do 12-step calls. We're not supposed to anyway. Anyway, that's enough of those. But the second basic underlying principle underlying the traditions is, did you ever read the book Not God? I think it's the best history of AA written. Kurtz wrote the book. He wrote another beautiful book that I'm reading now. It's called The Importance of Small Things, whatever the hell it's about. But it's beautiful. And in Not God, he named the book Not God because he knew Bill and Bob realized that they were not God. You watched what you did last night with Bill, the con man. He certainly was not God-like. But let's see, how can I cheat this guy out of that? I love it. I love it. I love it. They're just goofy as I am. But in the book, he talks about that, about how AA is so careful, not, and of course in our concepts we say we decide everything by vote, discussion and vote, and that we, the only power there is a higher power as he expresses himself in our group conscience. And when I was a delegate in panel 26, which was just past the Ice Age, I came to understand what the traditions are talking about. We would have something on the floor, it'd go through a committee and be argued and discussed and finally to come to the floor, and then we'd argue for 2 or 3 days about it. And then at the end, we would make an advisory action. Oh, boy. So we would tell the groups, well, we'd kind of advise you not to do that. But that's as far as we would go. And if there was like two people that were against something, were getting ready to vote, they would let these two clowns talk again. You know, I taught parliamentary law. I know when I got two-thirds, shut up. Vote them out. And it drove me crazy until I finally understood they're talking about substantial unanimity. And that's just about everybody. And I know at the conference, if it wasn't substantial unanimity, we put it off till next year. Nothing was that big a deal. Just put it off till next year. Alcoholics have emergencies, but Alcoholics Anonymous doesn't. And so this principle of not God is so important. Some of you might be thinking about sponsorship here. Sponsorship's not covered by the traditions whatsoever. The concept mentioned that nobody is to be put in authority over another and that kind of thing. But I'm with Clancy. He said it better than anybody I ever heard. He said, sponsorship is a whole different can of corn. Because if you come to me and you say, Cliff, I want you to sponsor me. Well, I must have something you want, and you want to learn how to do it. And so I will lay out what I think you should do if I'm sponsored by you, and you can say yes or no. And maybe I'll start sponsoring. Maybe it'll go on a while, and you will decide, I don't want you as a sponsor anymore, Cliff. And so you will walk up to me and say, I'm getting another sponsor, Cliff. What am I going to do about that? Say, no. You can't go leave me. You just go on your way. So where does this bullying come in? Where does this giving orders and everybody being afraid? Where does that come from? All I got to do is say, sayonara, pal. I don't put up with this. But there must be something to what Clancy calls strong sponsorship. I think I know what he means by that. I know what I mean by that. I mean that I care about you, and I'm going to follow what you're doing, and I'm going to try to make sure that you do what you need to do to stay sober. Now, if you resent that, that's too bad. I have one guy I sponsored for 34 years now. I've never given him an order. I've never told him to do anything. He just does it. And I have another guy that I scream at twice a week. You know? This guy I'm talking about, I have hung up on him more times than all the other men I've ever sponsored, forever. What he calls this, you hurt my feelings yesterday. Yeah. I'm really worried about that, you know. But aside from sponsorship, how many times you've been in a group, and there's a big argument in your group, and they take it to a vote, and you get like one more than half. Shut up, we won. That's not the traditional way. We'll wait a while and talk it over again till we get substantial unanimity. And you know, we talk about groups. This is a group this weekend. You know, God is talking to us through this group this weekend. And we have a higher power. His name is Bob. But you know, intergroup central office is a group. The area assembly is a group. The conference is a group. And so each one of them, God has to talk to them at their level and what they're doing. And so the group conscious, there's a lot of different group consciousnesses. And at all those levels, we're not God. I'm not God. I can't make decisions for the group. We have to do the group as a whole. You know, in the concepts they say, everything in the AA should be decided by discussion, vote. I was the first chairman of the North County San Diego Intergroup. We split off from San Diego in 1979. We had 99 groups at the time. And we had intergroup meeting once a month, and about 50 groups would be there, about 50% of all the groups in the area. And after a year, started drifting down. There was like 43. And I wrote this damn letter. What's the matter with you people? And they all 50 got, you know. In North San Diego County today, there are 650 groups. The average attendance at the intergroup meeting is 41. What's democratic about that? Where does that group conscience come from? 40 people are going to decide for 650 groups. And they make the decision. They're there. What the hell else are they going to do? And the other 600 and whatever don't participate. That's dangerous. To me, that's very frightening. And so, not God applies... Oh, that's the wrong page. Look like Tom up here, for God's sake. I'm the small part of a great whole. I don't run anything. There's only one authority, a loving God, as He may express Himself in our conscience. We can't keep anyone out. Haven't you seen people say, oh, don't take... No. Do you ever have one of them say to you, he's drunk, why did you bring him here? Oh, I don't know. Just a whim. Where the hell else would I take him? I used to love it when I was... We always had a drunk in the meeting. It always livened the meeting up. Somebody just... And if he got too obnoxious, two or three people take him out and talk to him in the hall, bang his head against the wall, get his attention. But you rarely find a wet one anymore in the meetings. And it's like throwing a hawk in the chicken pen, you know what I mean? Every group is a spiritual entity. Isn't that an interesting way to put it? Each group is a spiritual entity. I have felt that this weekend, most especially when Gail was doing that remarkable, remarkable thing. I don't think I have been so moved, you know, since my wife threatened to leave. We need the least possible organization. We can't blow our own horn. We can't... Elsa Chamberlain used to say, there's no amount of good you can do in the world if you don't care who gets the credit. That's very true. The real leaders I've seen in AA are the people who just do it and don't tell anybody about it and don't make somebody else do it with them. They just go do it. Those are the real heroes in Alcoholics Anonymous. I could no more get one of these things together than I could fly. But there are people who can do it. And thank God for them. We're not supposed to blow our own horn. And, of course, the two anonymity ones are very much concerned with that. You know, we don't want to... I find people in AA who think we're the only answer. That only AA can get anybody sober. And only AA does a lot of good. It sure saves us, but there are other people who get sober without AA. People have been getting sober in religion, having a spiritual experience since time immemorial. When my sponsor Bill died, you were there. They packed this hall, just packed full. And he was not a speaker. He never got out of World War II when he talked, you know. But he was just this little dynamo AA, just everybody knew. And the place was packed. And I sat there. I got to lead the meeting. I never forget. I said, how many of you here loved Bill? Every hand in the room shot up. I said, how many of you here had a resentment against Bill? Every hand. My sponsor never had a resentment. He was a carrier. But 5 days later, I went to a funeral. It was in the gym of the high school where I taught. And there was this guy, black bus driver, who was also a reverend in the Baptist church. And he got sober. He met his wife, and he was a terrible drunk, real violent drunk. And, boy, he was tough. And he met his wife, and she was a very Christian, and she kind of converted him. And he hadn't had a drink in 30 years. And he was a real force in the community for good. And it really got me. Within 5 days of each other, I saw those two men celebrated. And so we're not the only ones that are taking care of people. Junior saved as many people as Bill, maybe more. So we're not the only ones. We can't get too cocky. And the traditions tell us that all the time. You know, we're just one group. And we just take care of our business. But if it bothers, if it's something that covers everybody, And there we are again. I've been to the specific group. And I mean, that's a live group. I mean, they're having fun there. And they're serious about their Alcoholics Anonymous. They're serious about getting sober. And they got a lot of rules. You know, you got to wear a coat and a tie if you talk there. And if you're a woman, you have to wear a skirt. I don't know if they whip you if you know it. I don't know. The Taliban whips you, but I don't know if they do or not. And I'll tell you another story. Just one more story. When I was about 5 years sober, I was summer vacation, and I just decided I'd look at different groups. And on Monday night, I drove up to L.A., and I went to the old Venice meeting. It was called Where the Debris Meets the Sea. There was one car, mine, in there, and like 47 Harleys. Everybody muscle tattoos. The gal read Chapter 5 had this tank top. She bent over, and I didn't hear a word she said. And there were dogs in the meeting. And the dogs started going, ah. And, you know, it was a great meeting. Foul mouth. Oh, but it was really fun. And on Tuesday night, I went to a little town over inland from Oceanside named Fallbrook. It's just a little farming community. There are about 14 people there, just little old country folk. You know, and they were talking about the frost getting the rhubarb. And but it was a great meeting. Very spiritual meeting. Got a lot out of it. On Thursday night, I went to my home group. It was kind of a dressed-up Venice. On Friday, I went to the Men's Stag meeting down in San Diego where these myriad of old-timers were there. They had these big leather chairs, and you had to have 40 years where you sit in them. So I went to all those meetings in 1 week, and they were so different. Every damn one of them was so different. But they were all good AA meetings. Birds of a feather flock together. If you don't like the way we do it in our group, go start your own group. You just need a coffee pot and one other sickle. And that's how AA has grown, just that way. And so that group conscience is that. But what about the guy who's in the Venice group who goes to the Fallbrook meeting and uses the four-letter verb about 75 times in three sentences? I don't think that's right. In your group, if that's what you want, that's okay. But don't bring it out to other groups and louse up their meetings. But thank you. One other guy's awake. And there's a very fine line we're all walking here. How are we going to be at home doing what we do in our groups and not expect other groups to be like us? You know, we just have to let God let us know in our groups. And that's why we have intergroups. And that's why we have area assemblies. And that's why we have a conference. So we can talk to each other and decide what the hell we're going to do here. And we have some problems in AA, don't we? We have people who come out of treatment centers. Clancy says we get all these addicts in the meetings because the treatment center only had one bus. And so they go to AA with all of them, you know. And do you ever notice the newcomers sit together? I tell them, don't do that. Sit away, sit by an old-timer. Your ribs will get sore, but you might learn something, you know. Yeah. Because all it takes with seven newcomers sitting together from a treatment center, all it takes is one loser to kill them all. And so we try to break them up in my home group. We try to scatter them out some. We find that it's pretty successful. And then, of course, people are going to talk about drugs. Now, I don't know. I guess I'm in the middle somewhere here because of my children. All three of my children are good members of AA. They're and they don't broadcast anything else. But the fact that remains that they did many other substances to help them along the way. And I've had people that talked at my home group, and I just want to go up there and say, shut up. You have nothing to tell us. All you're talking about is hashish or whatever it is you're talking about. There's only one requirement for membership. And how many of you ever belonged to an organization that only had one requirement? Most organizations, there's a financial requirement, a legal requirement, there's all kinds of requirements. We only have one. You have to have a desire to stop drinking. That seems clear to me. But a lot of people get very discouraged or get very mixed up about it. And I guess part of that is treatment center tells them that it's all the same. I don't know. Some treatment centers do and some don't. I personally think the greatest danger to Alcoholics Anonymous goes back to the beginning of my talk. The greatest danger of Alcoholics Anonymous is self-obsession. When I got to Alcoholics Anonymous, I was the only human in the world. And I was sick and angry and crazy. And I had, from the time I was 4 years old, I built a prison for myself. I thought I was building a wall to keep you out. And I was just alone in there. And Peg said, alcoholism is the only prison where the locks are on the inside. And my sponsor says, because you're a brilliant intellectual, he numbered the keys for you. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. And so I had to grow up. I had to say, I know I'm a small part of a great whole. I know what how I want things to go in this meeting, and I'm going to argue for that. And I'm going to try to convince you that I'm right in this case. But if I lose, I'm going to shut up and march. If the group decides this is the way we go, I only have two choices. I can go start another group, or I can shut up and march. And I have always chosen to shut up and march. And it seems to always turn out that way. When the group makes a group conscience, it always seems to work out fine. And the other great danger in AA, and the reason self-obsession, I've heard, 200 fifth steps in my years in the program. And the number one defect of character of every single man I've ever worked with is self-obsession. We heard it from every one of you guys this weekend, every single one of you. The only way you could learn to be happy was to get out of yourself. Look at that other guy and see what you can do for him. And see what I can do for my group. Not criticize my group. See what the hell I can do for it. What can I do for AA? I had a lot of physical problems here lately. My arteries are giving out. You know, you have a tendency to die when that happens. What the hell? And I got all these aches and pains and crap. But I notice when I'm sitting around thinking about how I feel, I'm in bad shape. But if one of my guys calls, and I have to go over there and straighten him out, I forget to be sick. It just works that way. It's just that way. Or they call and with some petty little problem of theirs, and I say, well, just turn it over to God. And I hang up and say, now what was I worried about? Get back to thank you. And so the traditions are telling us the group has to be important. If we don't have the group, we're not going to live. Now, I'm pretty well finished here, but when I quit, I've asked John, my favorite, but you're second, to bring a chair up here because my right leg is giving, saying, that's enough. And so I'm just going to sit here. If anybody wants to slap me, come up here. The greatest thing I ever... Oh, you're not John, do it. You took your job, John. You're not my favorite anymore. The greatest thing I think Bill Wilson ever wrote, the greatest sentence he ever wrote, it was not in the big book, and it wasn't in the 12 and 12, and it was in AA Comes of Age, when we had that convention, conference, where we adopted the traditions and the concepts, and Bill turned AA over to us. The man created AA. He built it. He wrote all the books. He wrote all the literature. He slaved and drove and killed himself to build this movement. And he turned it over to us. And he said in the book, I never get through this. He went up the back of the balcony, looked down, and he said, at last AA is safe. Even from me. I put that in my morning prayers. That's the last thing I say in the morning. Maybe AA always be safe, even from me. Thanks.